It amounted to blasphemy. It amounted to insulting Islam.
Violent protests continue in Pakistan. It's Monday, November 27th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us for Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the Pope visits Myanmar and Bangladesh. Australia maps a new foreign policy. Residents cast ballots in historic Nepal vote. Battling cholera in Bangladesh, Indonesia saving the ecology. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Pakistani Islamists clashed with security forces for a second day Sunday on the outskirts of Pakistan's capital, Islamabad, burning vehicles before withdrawing to a protest camp they have occupied for more than 2 weeks. Hospital officials said nearly 200 people were hurt, most of them police. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with veteran correspondent Ayaz Ghul, reporting for VOA from Islamabad.
Well, we still have sort of a stalemate prevailing because a police crackdown was launched Saturday morning to disperse these protesters. But because the moment the news of the crackdown went out, the number of protesters started increasing and going up to from several thousand to 10 or 12,000 people. That made the job of the security forces, the police forces primarily, very difficult. And there were then clashes that broke out, resulted in injuries and, in fact, several deaths, prompting the administration of the capital city to halt the operation because apparently the protesters were really determined not to give in and to continue with their with their protests until their demands were met. So we still have them sitting at the main interchange that leads to Islamabad. And as a result of this crackdown, we now have in several cities of Pakistan small protests taking place on main highways near the railway stations and bus stations. So basically bringing intercity traffic to a halt also.
What is the cause of the protest?
Well, these they're demanding. Basically, it started several weeks ago when the parliament approved a new bill. And in that bill, there was a minor change that the parliament introduced, and that was related to the membership oath. You know, when parliamentarians take oaths to become members, there was a minor change that occurred, which the government said was a clerical error. But according to these religious protesters, it amounted to blasphemy. It amounted to insulting Islam. So they started pressurizing the government, and obviously, not only that, the pressure increased out on the street, but from within the parliament, there were right-wing parties and religious parties who condemned this action and forcing the government to reverse that change. And they restored the original clause in its original state. So, but that did not make these protesters happy. They said because it amounted to blasphemy, so whoever was responsible for introducing this change must be exposed, must be brought to justice and penalized. And they have demanded from the outset that the law minister should be punished because it is the responsibility of the law minister to write or remove such clauses. And that is what they have been now primarily demanding, that unless and until the law minister is removed and punished, they will not disperse. Obviously, the protesters, their leaders, have vowed to continue until the entire government steps down. That is the latest demand from these protesters today.
What is the overall effect of these protests on everyday life in the major cities of Pakistan, and do you see any way out of this?
Well, in the last 24 hours, life has almost come to a standstill all over Pakistan because major motorways have been blocked. And people cannot travel. Intercity travel has been almost impossible. And that has forced, in fact, administrations in different cities, including Islamabad, to shut down schools and other education institutions for the next 2 days. So, and secondly, it has been very difficult for people to know exactly what has been happening because there has been a complete shutdown of media and social media. The government has just cut all options for people to know what is happening around the country, although just a couple of hours ago, they restored the private television channels who have started a broadcast just like a couple of hours ago. At least people are knowing that what is the latest situation. But again, these broadcasts are being controlled through an executive order. Television stations have been instructed not to show live pictures of these demonstrations. So, frankly speaking, as of this moment, it is very difficult to say what is happening all over the country. When we speak to people, individuals in cities like Karachi, Lahore, people tell us they're stuck. They've gone there like on private visits, on official visits, and they have not been able to come back to Islamabad, or those who are in Islamabad are stuck here for the next few days. So, as I said, the stalemate is prevailing, and we really don't foresee any solution in the next 2-3 days unless one of the parties, gives in. But whoever does it will have to face serious consequences.
Ayaz Ghul is VOA's reporter in Pakistan. He's been doing it for many, many years, and we appreciate it. And Ayaz, thanks for being with us.
These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Pakistan Islamists rally after deadly clashes with police. Thousands of tourists stranded as Bali volcano spews ash. Nepal votes in key election, hoping for stability. Australia urged to build closer ties to China as U.S. power fades. For Cambodian techies, U.S. tour ends with vision of startup at home. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Pope Francis visits Myanmar and neighboring Bangladesh today amid international outrage over what the United States describes as the ethnic cleansing of Myanmar's Rohingya Muslim minority. During the trip lasting through December 2nd, the Pope will meet with Myanmar's civilian and military leaders, as well as Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh. As Jusamen Oni reports, all eyes are on the pontiff to see how he handles the diplomatic minefield in Myanmar, also known as Burma.
A message from the Pope to the Burmese people as he prepares to visit their nation.
Desidero inviare una parola di saluto e di amicizia.
I wish to send a word of greetings and friendship to all the people. I look forward to being with you. I come to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ, a reconciliation, peace, and forgiveness message.
The first papal trip ever to Myanmar comes 6 months after full diplomatic ties were forged in May, during a visit by the country's de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, who has since come under international pressure over the plight of the Rohingya. More than half of the Rohingya Muslim populations have fled their homes in the Rakhine state after an August attack by Rohingya insurgents sparked a brutal military crackdown. Refugees residing in camps in neighboring Bangladesh accuse Myanmar's army of rape, mass murders, and destruction of villages, allegations which the military denies. Experts warn the pontiff is plunging into a diplomatic minefield.
The vast majority of people in Myanmar do not believe the international narrative of abuse against the Rohingya and the refugee numbers that we're seeing in Bangladesh. That is just not accepted as fact here in Myanmar. And so I think if the Pope did come and weigh in heavily on this issue, it would inflame tensions, it would inflame sentiment, public sentiment.
Pope Francis will once again meet with State Councillor Suu Kyi and separately with the head of the country's army. The outspoken Pope has been cautioned not to even use the term Rohingya, as Myanmar does not recognize the ethnic group to be of legitimate status.
If he uses the word Rohingya, some of the Buddhist nationalists might then protest and complain about that. And some of the Catholics in the country are very nervous about that because they fear that they could be targeted by nationalists.
The Pope will also meet with Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh, where hundreds of thousands are sheltering in refugee camps. Myanmar has agreed to take back some of the refugees, so long as they can prove their residency, but the details are still unclear. As Catholics in Myanmar await the head of the church, a prayer that his visit brings peace and divine intervention to ease tensions. Jesus Samaoni, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, tens of thousands of eligible voters in northern Nepal cast ballots Sunday in an historic election. They are choosing local and national lawmakers in the country's first provincial polls. The two-stage vote will see the more populous South casting ballots December 7th. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always very happy to have you with us on VOA Asia. Australia's latest blueprint for foreign policy says that greater self-reliance is needed as the country prepares for a world in which the United States retreats and China becomes more powerful and unpredictable. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Opportunity, security, strength are the three words on the cover of Australia's latest foreign policy document. The white paper is the first since 2003 and sets out Canberra's global strategy for the next decade. Its blunt assessment is that China is challenging America's position as the dominant force in the Asia-Pacific region. The policy blueprint argues the US will remain crucial to Australia's national security, but says Canberra must build even closer ties to Beijing. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull believes Australia must adapt to an evolving world order.
We are navigating a rapidly changing multipolar world in which each of the major players are testing their relationships with each other while undergoing rapid change themselves. In the past, we could safely assume that the world worked in a way that suited Australia. Now power is shifting and the rules and institutions are under challenge.
The white paper describes uncertainty in the Asia-Pacific region and calls on the Australian government to build stronger ties with other regional nations, such as India, Indonesia, Japan and South Korea. Turnbull has also stressed that his country must also take greater responsibility for its own security and prosperity. A military alliance with the United States dates back to the early 1950s. Bates Gill, a professor of Asia-Pacific Security Studies at Macquarie University in Sydney, agrees that Australia shouldn't be overly reliant on the US.
Australia must recognise that in this more volatile period, in a period of greater unpredictability as to the continued commitment on the part of the United States to its engagement in this region, it has to look for other options and not be so reliant, as the white paper notes, on this long-standing and traditional relationship with the United States.
Australia has also raised concerns about the pace and scale of China's activities in the contentious South China Sea, prompting Beijing to insist that Canberra shouldn't get involved in the wide-ranging territorial dispute. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA Asia. The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia, a volcano on the Indonesian tourist island of Bali sent plumes of smoke and steam thousands of meters into the air Sunday for a third day in a week, triggering flight disruptions and leaving thousands of tourists stranded. Flight cancellations stranded roughly 7,000 domestic and international passengers. Your trip to VOA Asia Facebook is available, always just a click away. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Tens of thousands of Nepalese in mountain villages and towns cast votes Sunday in a landmark election hoping to usher in political stability that has eluded the country since it began its rocky transition to democracy a decade ago. It is the first election after the tiny Himalayan country adopted a new federal republic constitution following the abolition of the monarchy in 2008. Besides choosing lawmakers for a national parliament, voters are choosing provincial assemblies for the first time. Polling was brisk. More than 3 million people were eligible to vote in the first phase of the two-stage polls under tight security. After a decade beset with instability in which the government changed hands through 9 prime ministers and a fractious political parties bickered over constitutions, most Nepalese hope that these elections will deliver a clear verdict. Some are deeply disappointed that the advent of democracy brought little benefit to the country since a violent civil war ended in 2006 and pro-democracy protests led to the abolition of the monarchy. Many are hoping that the provincial assemblies being created for the first time will give local governments a greater voice in development. The election is also being closely watched by India and China, neighbors that are vying for influence in the strategic Himalayan country that lies sandwiched between them. And while the Nepalese Congress is closer to New Delhi, the leaders of the left parties are keen to build closer ties with Beijing. The next round of voting will be December 7th. The counting could take several days. Our thanks to Anjana Pasricha in New Delhi for sending us this story. This news alert from VOA Asia, an explosion in the eastern Chinese port city of Ningbo has killed at least 2 people, injured dozens more. The blast brought down buildings, shattered windows, and knocked holes in walls of buildings a kilometer away. There were conflicting reports of just what was at the site of the explosion. You'll always find great stories to see and share at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the World Health Organization is sending 900,000 doses of cholera vaccine to Bangladesh. That's to help stave off a cholera outbreak. The shipment comes after the WHO said it could have acted faster to fight a massive deadly cholera epidemic in Yemen. VOA's Carol Pearson reports the UN agency has vowed to eradicate the disease by the year 2030.
In Yemen, clean drinking water and operational medical facilities are scarce. More than 500,000 people there have gotten cholera, and that number is expected to top out at 1 million before the year ends. Worldwide, about 100,000 people die from cholera each year. Health workers are concerned the next major outbreak will be in the Rohingya refugee camps in Bangladesh. Dr. Amish Adalja is an infectious disease specialist at the Johns Hopkins University Center for Health Security. He's also a fellow of the Infectious Diseases Society of America. He spoke about the World Health Organization's pledge to end cholera by 2030.
It's not possible to completely eliminate it from the planet the way we eliminated smallpox. However, we can make cholera as rare in Bangladesh and as rare in Yemen as it is in the United States and in the rest of North America.
Cholera is a bacterial disease. The bacteria lives in coastal waters and in brackish rivers. It's also found and spread in places with poor water treatment and unsanitary toilet facilities. It's caused by eating or drinking contaminated food or water. Health and nutrition specialist Jesse Hartness is with Save the Children, a humanitarian organization working to alleviate suffering in Yemen. He says malnutrition raises the risk of contracting cholera.
There's a cycle of illness and malnutrition where you have a child who is sick and they lose their appetite and they become dehydrated from having diarrhea and they obviously lose weight. And then once they're malnourished, then that also drives their vulnerability to additional illness.
Anyone can get cholera, but children, pregnant women, and the elderly are most at risk. But Hartness says cholera is not difficult or expensive to treat.
It actually is really simple if you can catch it early and you can provide hydration to the less severe patients so they don't become the severe patients that then require more intensive treatment.
Sanitation is key to preventing cholera. But in places ravaged by flooding and other natural disasters, or by man-made disasters like war, or in crowded refugee camps, sanitation is hard to maintain. Human waste cannot easily be disposed of hygienically, so in addition to providing aid, organizations like Save the Children find themselves trying to rebuild sanitation systems. The WHO says about 2 billion people globally lack access to clean water, putting them at risk of cholera. Vaccines can help prevent its spread, but Dr. Adalja says building sanitation systems in poor countries is critical in preventing cholera once and for all.
It's basically a poverty trap for some of those countries, which they can never get out of.
47 countries are affected by cholera, and the World Health Organization expects the global cholera situation to get worse because of conflict, climate change, and population growth. That's why this new strategy to end cholera, put together by the WHO, is so urgent. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Slowly but steadily, the consciousness about the need to protect and preserve the natural environment seems to be rising all over the world. Grassroots initiatives get more coverage, and those involved in them say it feels good to be part of a beneficial movement. VOA's George Pudich reports on two of the latest initiatives in Indonesia.
As in many other places, this canal in the Indonesian village of Wukir Sari was once full of plastic bottles and bags, food scraps and other kinds of trash. Now fish once again swim in its clean water. School children learn how to turn discarded bottles and cans into toys, while the waste collected from the canal is turned into compost used in the villagers' gardens. It took only one person to spark a whole range of changes.
Ari Ahmad initiated a vegetable garden which is very profitable for us. We can cooperate with all women in this village who can grow their vegetables. It also makes us more eager to keep the environment in this village more clean and healthy.
35-year-old Ari Ahmad Zulfami led a group of young men who cleaned up the canal, persuaded people to separate garbage for recycling, and showed them how to make compost. The initiative quickly gained support from the Indonesian Environmental Agency.
We agree with this movement and encourage and motivate people to take part in environmental maintenance.
Initiatives to reduce plastic waste, which is a huge problem in Indonesia, sometimes take an unexpected approach, such as serving beverages and ice cream in edible cups and cones.
I saw how much plastic waste is produced here, which takes hundreds or thousands of years to degrade and contaminates everything.
Cups and cones made from farmed seaweed have a jelly-like consistency and come in peppermint and green tea flavor. Made by hand, they are more expensive than plastic and still need a plastic wrapper, but customers say they help fight the explosion of plastic waste in the country.
I hope in the future the packaging could be better and not use plastic. The cone is enough. We don't need another plastic wrapper.
Ivo Ware says it will soon be able to offer other seaweed-based products, such as biodegradable coffee and tea bags. George Pudich, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We say hello to everybody who's listening in the Philippines via DZUP 1602 AM radio at the University of the Philippines, Diliman, Quezon City. Thanks for joining us today. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, John Ellison, our managing editor, Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. We also invite you to stop by VOA Asia Facebook online. Check out all the great stories that are available online. And also, you can send us a message. We'd love to hear from you. Our email as well is voaasia@voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead.